Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. This is Gilbert Joy, your host. Join me as I interview world-class performers, seven and eight-figure entrepreneurs, digital nomads, and those living on their edge. Basically, living on your edge means you're constantly pushing your comfort zone, always striving for new heights. And that's exactly what we do at the Live Your Edge podcast. Did you know that your lifestyle could be causing you unnecessary pain? Well, join me in welcoming Armando Cruz, who's the best-selling author with the book The Legacy Code, Modern Man's Guide to Escape Obscurity and Live a Life Unleashed. He helps his clients to unlock their inner potential through understanding how health and vitality play a huge role in their lives. So if you are feeling stressed out, you have a lot of work going on, and you can't seem to get your act together, you've got to listen to this episode. Join me in welcoming Armando Cruz. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. This is Gilbert Joy, your host. Today, we are joined by Armando Cruz, who focuses on helping people eliminate your pain and exponentially increase your health and vitality. He is the best-selling author of The Legacy Code, Modern Man's Guide to Escape Obscurity and Live a Life Unleashed. Love the title, by the way. Welcome to the show, Armando.
Thank you so much for having me.
So walk us through your journey. What inspired you to help people in the first place? Like what was your journey like that leading up to that?
Since I can remember, I've been someone who's wanted to first of all work with my hands, but also help others. Early on, I had the fortune of going to work with my dad, and my dad had a construction company. And I quickly realized I do not want to do construction because I live in South Florida. And I would go to work with him in the summers, which is ridiculously hot, humid, and mosquitoes everywhere. And then add on top of that, digging trenches, carrying plywood and carrying different building materials. As a kid, I was like, man, there's no way that I want to do this with the rest of my life. I also had to take out the trash. And I was like, every week I would take out the trash. I was like, man, I definitely don't want to be a garbage man. And I would have to cut the grass at home. And I was like, you know, I realized I don't want to cut lawns either. So it really helped me, like in doing the things that I didn't want, helped me clarify a little bit more what I did want. And what I did want was, I loved doing sports. And so one thing led to the other where I was never the best, but I was always trying to figure out ways to be able to keep up with the best. And in order for me to do that, I had to research, you know, what are the strength training routines that I had to do? What are the recovery routines that I need to do just to be able to keep up with the guys who are much more talented than myself? And as that kind of grew, I realized that I needed to understand injury because most people get injured. And then as I realized and dove deeper into there, I realized, wait, there's something else connected deeper to that, which is what's going on with your nutrition. And then when I dove into that and I said, wait, people have knowledge all over the place. Like there's a surplus of knowledge, but why are people still not doing it? And I realized, oh, the key is the mind. If we don't understand what's going on with the mind, then none of this else gets executed consistently. And so that's kind of like the journey that I went. I thought at first it was going to be all about professional athletes. Then it kind of shifted into people with chronic pain. And I still work with a lot of people with chronic pain, but I've also shifted into, okay, how do we allow people to thrive and become the best in whatever it is that they decide? And that's where the mind comes in.
Okay. You shared a bit about doing things that you didn't like to do
allowed you to find the things that you did like to do. So tell us more about that. What do you mean by doing the things that you didn't like to do? I know you listed some examples, but I'm just curious, like, what was sort of the revelation that you have when you do things that you don't like to do? Is it just uncovering what you don't want to do and then sort of revealing what you do want to do, or is it something else?
One thing that I've found is I talk to a lot of young people, and the question is still the same. By the way, not even young people, people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s, that they're still trying to figure out where their place in this world is. They're still trying to figure out what they want to do when they grow up, right? And, you know, for a lot of those people, what ends up happening is that they feel like they need to know the answer, but they're not willing to explore. And this just ties in with this, because when you explore something, you're not exploring based off a result. You're exploring to discover what it is so that you can gather the data to then move forward. More often, people go out seeking for the right thing as opposed to just exploring. Okay, here's an option that's available to me. Why don't I try it for a little bit of time? See if I like it. If you have no inkling of what it is that you want to do, or how you want to move in this world, or how you want to impact this world, try different things, because it'll help to shift you in different things, in different directions. The examples that I gave of mowing the lawn, again, I love nature, but I didn't really want to be mowing lawns for the rest of my life. So I said, okay, you know what? I know how to do this. This is a skill that I have acquired. And if I really needed to, I could mow lawns, but it's not where I feel my gift is. And the gift was uncovered by a passion that I had. What was the passion? Sports. I loved, I played baseball, I played basketball, I played soccer, I ran track, I ran cross country. And again, in most of them, I was never the best. So where I spent my time was figuring out how to become better so that I could keep up with the guys who were better than me. And in that process, I realized, hey, I really like this. I like this idea of performance and health. And I said, wait, I can study this. I don't have to be a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer or something like that. Okay, great. If this is an option, let me go pursue it. And my parents were very, very instrumental in pushing and encouraging, make sure you do what you love, because the money will come, but no amount of money is going to uncover misery. If you hate waking up every day because you can't stand what you do, you can't stand the people that you're around, the environment that you're in, that's not the way to live your life. So figure out what it is that you want to do. You'll make money in some way, shape, or form. And that kept evolving over and over again. So don't be afraid to do things that you know are probably not going to be long-term. Think of them as experiments. Hey, let me experiment for the next 6 weeks to a year. What would it be like to do this? What is the feedback? What are the skills that I have acquired? What was the data that I received that I can say, wait, this is something that I want to pursue, or, oh, I don't even want to be anywhere close to this. Does that help?
Yeah, it definitely helps. And it makes a lot of sense, because in trying out anything for that matter, and then figuring out, okay, I like to do this or I don't like to do this, which is in my experience, a way of peeling back the layer of the so-called onion of what your truth is, what you really truly do enjoy doing. And it's a lot easier, you know, in my experience, to find things that I don't like than to really identify what I do like. And like you said, I had to go through the trial and error to really like remove all those extra layers of things that wasn't me, wasn't part of who I was. And when it comes to these experiments, I'm just curious, how do you structure these experiments? Do you just go and do it, or do you have a framework for approaching any sort of new experiment for figuring out what you truly enjoy doing?
That's a great question. Here's the answer, but kind of not the answer. And here's what I mean. You have to know yourself, right? If you're the type of person that is genuinely methodical about something, that you really thrive in structure and process is important to you, then if I say to do something very spontaneous, that really doesn't resonate with the way you operate in this world. So create a plan that has steps that you could follow to do that. That may mean, look, I'm going to list 5 things that I want to try. And okay, so step 1 is to call this person. Step 2 is this. Okay, so that's how maybe a person that operates with a high level of process may go through something like that. Another person who is a little bit more like myself, which is I'm a lot more sporadic. I'm willing to kind of jump into things. I'm very quick to start things. For me, that's kind of one of my strengths. Luckily for me, my wife is the opposite. It's hard for her to start things, but she always sees things through. And so she helps keep me on the straight and narrow so that I don't start too many things and then don't finish anything. Right. So I have a great partner that we work together to ensure that we're moving in the right direction. But what I was saying is that if you're the type of person that's a little bit more spontaneous, you can just wake up one morning and say, hey, what is there to volunteer? Maybe I can go somewhere and volunteer something and start connecting with people in a very different way, connecting with a trade or a skill set that I never thought possible. Very often in service of others, you'll find out a lot more about yourself because people become a mirror to ourselves. And so we start looking very often like the judgments that we place on other people are the things that we dislike about ourselves. And so when you're going to serve others, when you see these things, these judgments pop up, you're like, oh, wait, let me look in the mirror. Let me start addressing some of this. Let me start looking at this and let me see how this can start moving me in the right direction. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So you brought up a good point of other people being a mirror to yourself. In this case, when you're trying out new things and you encounter people, even maybe the people doing the stuff that you haven't tried yet, you might have judgments, you might have initial impressions, and that might just be your own projection of fear or some inadequacy that you feel about yourself. And how does that awareness develop? Like, how do you develop an awareness of that? And I know it's kind of difficult to address that. Is something that comes again with experience. Also for myself, when I find myself judging or making any sort of snap judgment, sometimes I don't catch it and it just slips through the cracks. So how do you do it?
You got to give yourself permission to suck. Okay. Think about this. when you see a child trying to do something, he's trying to learn how to walk, or he's trying to draw a picture. Okay. If you've ever seen a child trying to draw a picture, you know, a young child, very often it's not a great picture. So what do you say? Do you say, that's a horrible picture. Why are you even picking up a crayon? No, you don't say that. You say, oh, good job. Keep going. You encourage the behavior. So it becomes a question of how can you encourage the skill or the behavior to improve the skill? This is a skill set problem. So if you're not good at picking up on some of this awareness, you need to ask yourself, okay, how can I become more skillful at this? Because skillful is, there's a process to becoming better when you're skillful, or when you're unskillful to become skillful. So breaking it down and saying, okay, how can I become more skillful at picking up when I make snap judgments? Okay, well, when I make snap judgments, I, first of all, I'm looking outward towards somebody and this is what I feel. Okay, that should be a flag. Whenever you start feeling something like this, it should be a warning that there's a snap judgment about to be laid out. And then step two, maybe, okay, well, now that I know this feeling, what do I need to do to reshift the way I'm looking at this? Okay, well, it may be breaking that pattern. Say, okay, whenever I feel this way, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to stand up, or I'm going to take 5 deep breaths, or I'm going to clap. All of a sudden, that breaks the pattern, and now that the pattern is broken, now your next move can really shift the way you're going to go in this. So now the next thing, you broke the pattern. How do we start creating a direction that we want to go to? Okay. Automatically, when I see this happening, I'm going to look for 3 things I like about this person. Right? This is just an example. You can come up with your own, but the idea here is break it down so that you can get better at the skill by, first of all, becoming more aware. Second, creating a break in the pattern. And third, executing an action step that moves you in the direction that you want to move towards.
That's great advice. I mean, the 3-step process, first, you know, being aware of it and breaking it. Some people, they have, like, say, a rubber band, and they would just snap the rubber band on their wrist every time they catch themselves doing something, a behavior that they should not be rewarding, I would say. And then find a way to turn that around. And like you said, you would find 3 things that you like about that person. So reverses the perception and allows you to be more open-minded towards what that person is doing and why you might feel that way about that person in that instance. Maybe it's something that you don't, maybe, like, let's say you don't like the way they walk. Let's say they don't like the way they walk. You know, maybe it can be you don't like the way you walk. Just an example of that, I think. Back to the point where you said other people are a mirror to ourselves. And I a lot of people are not aware that this sort of thing exists, where you can learn anything. You can learn a lot about yourself through others by just simply being aware and just taking those steps, like you said, to change everything around and allow yourself to really discover and improve as a person. In doing so, we were talking about the experiment. You reverse the judgment, and now you're open to exploring what it is that they're doing that you're not doing. What would follow that? Is there a process for actually committing to the experiment?
Yeah. I mean,
and yeah.
Look, if you want to create, first of all, if you want to break a habit, you have to do a few things. Number one, you have to eliminate the friction, the resistance towards the habit that you want to move towards, and you want to add more resistance to the habit that you're trying to break. Right? You have to make it difficult to do that, to act in this way, and then give yourself the pathway to add this way. A perfect example of this is a dam to redirect the water. Okay? The water is coming down the stream. And what are you going to do? I want it to make a right-hand turn. Okay. I want the flow to make a right-hand turn. So what do you got to do? You got to put more resistance on the left side of the river and build that up. So when the water hits, it crashes. There's resistance and now gets pushed towards the right. Okay. But you don't just put it straight, because then it's just straight on resistance and there's just turbulence. You tilt it back a little bit. So now there's a redirection of the water, not an impact, but a redirection. And so the same thing happens with habits that you're trying to break, is how do we create barriers that help redirect towards the behavior that we actually want?
So basically, for, let's say I have an ice cream habit, and I have a lot of ice cream in my my fridge. So if I want to get rid of this habit, instead of trying to resist going to the fridge and taking out the ice cream, I just get rid of the ice cream.
Right. Well, I mean, that's definitely going to put a hard habit, but I guess the question is, what is it that you really want? Right. Or maybe even addressing. So initially face value. Yeah. Don't have the ice cream in the house. Now, if you really want the ice cream, it's you got to get in your car. You got to go and pick up the ice cream. Right. So now it adds more steps that give you more space to stop that habit. Now, the question is, first, you know, you can do that, but maybe the bigger question is why do you, what about the ice cream are you craving? Why is this, like, are there specific times? Is it just after dinner when you're stressed out? Right? Because then, and now we're really addressing something deeper that impacts your life in a more meaningful way, as opposed to just taking stuff away from you and there's no real redirection for growth. It's just, oh no, you can't have that. And so then you have people talking like this. It says, oh, I've been good all week. I deserve a treat. You're not a dog. You don't get treats for doing tricks. You're an adult. And you make conscious choices. I'm either going to choose to eat this or not. If I'm not going to eat it, that's fine. If I do eat it, I understand the consequences from it, right? You can make yourself, you can make it more difficult by adding resistance, like you just said. But I think the bigger or probably more important question is okay, wait, why am I, what about this? What's leading me to eat this ice cream all the time? Or crave it. And if you do that, now you have control as opposed to just trying to do a willpower or a motivation type redirect, which is not long lasting. It doesn't sustain itself.
Okay. You mean if it's just a motivational one, sure, maybe one day they'll pass by the grocery store and they'll find themselves buying the ice cream again because they haven't addressed the problem of why ice cream in the first place. What is it about the ice cream and what's behind it?
Yeah, look, I'll give you an example, a personal example. I love chocolate, right? I love chocolate. I have three kids. And in November of last year, I asked them, you know, what do you think is a food that I can't live without? I kind of already knew that they knew, but I wanted to see how observant they were. And all three of them in unison were like, chocolate, there's no way you cannot eat chocolate. And I was like, my habit, my actions probably tell you that, right? And they're like, yeah, because you every time I see you that there's chocolate in the house, you always eat a lot of it. And I said, you're right. I said, but here's what I'm gonna tell you, here's what I wanna share with you is that I don't have to have it. And so I asked him, I said, tell me a time. Do you think I should not eat chocolate for a year? And they're like, no. Like now they're backtracking and they're like, no, that's too much. They don't want to see me suffer. They're like, how about 30 days? Can you do 30 days? I think one of them said like a day or like a week. I was like, no, that's too little bit. I said, okay, 30 days. All right, fine, 30 days. So 30 days came and went, and we are now February 18 when we're having this conversation. So we're essentially, you know, November, December, January, February, a good 4 months into it. I haven't had chocolate, and this time was different because there was a reason, that a deeper reason why I even went to this and did this and asked them this question is because I was realizing that there was a part of me that lacked some restraint and some control in this. And I wanted to prove it to myself that, you know what, as an example to my kids, I want to show them that food doesn't have to control you. You make the decisions on the food. And while I love chocolate, for the most part, I've been good. There've been a few times that it's like, oh, I would really like this, but I don't have to have it. And the side effect of it is because I haven't eaten chocolate, I haven't really had the desire to eat any other desserts. Ice cream is a big one. So before it was like, if I see ice cream, I mean, I'm kind of excessive in the things. Like I don't eat one piece of chocolate. I'll eat like a massive bar of chocolate. I won't eat a scoop of ice cream. I'll eat half a gallon of ice cream. So it's like one of those things that you have to know yourself. And when you have something that's going to move you, in this case, me being a good example for my kids to show them that food doesn't have to rule you, all of a sudden, it wasn't that important. Chocolate wasn't as important as my kids. Does that make sense?
So in essence, you sort of overrided that need for chocolate by having a need to set an example for your kids, which is a much greater motivator for you to stay off chocolate for 4 months.
Right. I mean, if you want to look at where's the resistance, well, I added resistance by having the kind of like having them observe me is a huge resistance because I know that they're looking at me. Right. Could I eat ice cream and not tell them? Yeah. Can I eat chocolate and not tell them? Yeah. But I don't know. And then I would be out of integrity. So this isn't about that. This is about, okay, the resistance is my kids know this is a problem that they've identified. That's why I asked them the question. Because I wanted to see if they had identified the problem that I was feeling of, do I really have control? In all honesty, I didn't know if I had the control of it yet. But I wanted to prove it to myself. And then I brought it to light and I asked them, do they see the same problem that I was seeing? And they did in unison. So I was like, okay, so this is an issue. If they're saying it with that much certainty, it's definitely an issue of that they've realized. And so now I have that resistance and I have that awareness. And I've broken the pattern or I've had a pattern interrupt by basically confessing to them and saying, okay, wait, you guys think that this is the case. This isn't like I am in control of this. I don't have to have chocolate. Now let me show you. So what did I do? Where were the places that I ate chocolate the most? My parents' house. Every time I went over there, they had all these chocolate bars. You know what? I don't go to that area. And in my mind, I say, okay, I just don't eat chocolate. And for me, that was enough. I'm not saying that for everyone that's going to be the same. Sometimes you need to do things more extreme. But I just kind of wanted to show you an actual example of that in my life that happened recently.
Seems like you, do you still crave the chocolate now? Or is it sort of not really that, like you don't need to have it? Once again, you can choose to
exactly.
Have it.
That's where I'm at. I can choose to have. I'll give you an example. We were driving the other day, my wife and I. For Valentine's Day, we were out and about, and we passed a Häagen-Dazs. And my comment to her was, "Man, you know, if I was eating chocolate, I would like rush in there and buy a chocolate ice cream. But since I'm not, like the desire to go in there and eat the chocolate ice cream is there. That would be great." But I've already made a decision. I'm not eating chocolate. So I don't like, okay, that's not an action I'm going to go do because I'm not eating chocolate. So what's the point in going in there?
So you sort of verbalized what you felt. And then because you sort of affirmed that you're not going to try to have this contradict yourself by actually going in there.
Yeah. You know, and by the way, there's something to be said for, I think it was Peter Drucker that said, you know, if you don't, you can improve something that you don't measure, something along those lines. Okay. And there's a streak. I've been going for almost 4 months. Now that has some weight. It has some momentum. Like, do I really want to mess up the streak? Right. By the way, you have to know what works for you. I have certain streaks, I have certain obsessions with that I know of the way that I operate that are meaningful to me. Like that streak is meaningful to me. How long can I keep it up? Right? I did that for like 3 years. with alcohol. I didn't have anything. And then one day it was my, I forgot. It was like my 8-year anniversary or 7-year anniversary with my wife. And we went out to eat. And I told her, I said, you know, with this meal, the way it is, I would really love to have a glass of wine. And at that point, I made a choice to have a glass of wine with her to celebrate and enhance the meal. It was a steak with, I still remember, it was a steak and mashed potatoes and I think some green beans, but it was all very rich. And I just felt like, man, a glass of Cabernet with this would really enhance the flavors. So I made an adult decision. I didn't say, oh, I'm breaking the streak, like I'm punishing myself. I didn't say, oh, you know, but it's okay because it's my anniversary, so I'm allowed to. No, I said, no, I'm making this conscious choice because I want to enhance this meal and enhance this experience right now. And I feel that the glass of red wine would have done that at that moment. And then I didn't drink again. It was just for that moment. I made the decision and I didn't drink.
That's great. I think a lot of people listening to this can take some pointers from just being able to break these bad habits and like bring it full circle, being able to explore, find out what is it that you like to do, don't want to do. And in the end, you do that by first knowing yourself and not having any judgments when you try to do these experiments. And finally, when it comes to breaking these cycles, you're able to get yourself out by having these frameworks in place. So in closing, what advice would you give to someone that finds themselves still stuck? They tried a few things, didn't work out. They found out a number of things they don't like, and the list is pretty long. What would you say to them?
There's still so many more opportunities and options you haven't even tried. I think part of the issue is that people think that the goal is the destination.
Mm-hmm.
But reality, the richness comes in the journey. And so instead of being frustrated and saying, oh, I'm going to give up because I haven't found it, it's like, no, have what I call, what, you know, I'm constantly sharing with both my kids, but also my clients, this concept of adventure. And I find that adventure is more a mindset of curiosity, a mindset of possibility, of potential. And if you're like, okay, wait, I'm going to try this and it didn't work out, it's not what, you know, that you weren't put on this earth to do. Okay, great. But what skills did I acquire? Who did I meet? Who did I connect with? What did I enjoy? What do I know that I dislike and want to move completely away? So it could help shift you there. Be willing to be curious and enjoy the process, even in the suffering, right? Because one of the components of, or the two main components of adventure are the unknown and suffering. Both of them help you become the person you need to be to move up to the next level, okay? Very much like if you're doing exercise, you're doing like a weight, like your weight training, you put resistance to make you stronger. Well, the suffering and the unknown and getting through that helps you become stronger and a better version of yourself so that you're ready for that next stage in your life.
Definitely. Thanks a lot with sharing all of this. It's been really insightful for myself, and I'm sure it is for our listeners. So for those that want to know more about you, Armando, where can they find you?
Sure. I have a few sites. You can take a look at the book and the context for the book at legacycodebook.com. And you can find me at Cruz, like my last name, Cruz country.com. And that's, you know, if you're having issues with your health, if you're having, you know, issues with energy, if you're having issues with like figuring out how to optimize your health, that's the site you'd go for that. If you just want to find out just more about me, my name, ArmandoCruz.com. So those three sites.
Awesome. If you want to optimize your life, check out Armando. And with that, I'm really grateful to have you on the show, Armando. Let's wrap it up and cheers. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Gilbert.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.